Don Carlos was middle-aged, stocky, balding, with thin eyebrows and a well-trimmed brown beard. His face was fleshy, with a bulbous nose and full lips. He wore a custom-tailored brown suit with black braided frogging and trim, a white ruffled shirt, and lace cuffs partly covering square, strong, thick-fingered hands. He stood in front of three men who were supposed to have some bad news for him.
Tell me what you know.
There was much shooting at the auction. Gringo Penance got in killing many men, vaqueros and buyers, freeing the slave girls and setting the building on fire.
We heard nothing. No sounds of gunfire.
We are too far away to hear shooting in town.
Don Carlos looked over the top of the wall toward town. Pago lay hidden behind a ridge, the glow of its lights showing above the crest as a blur. He saw nothing untoward, but was that a patch of red firelight shimmering in the blue-black opacity of night? He was unable to tell. One's eyes played tricks, especially at night.
You saw this?
We were not inside the opera house, Don Carlos. Such magnificence is not for such lowly ones as us, but we were outside. We heard the shooting, saw the men and women flee in terror. There were many dead, more wounded, much blood. Your men were busy fighting, so we volunteered to tell you, Excellency. We are but poor, humble men who wish to do our duty to the Padron, and the generosity of Don Carlos is known to all.
Yes, yes, you'll be well taken care of if your story proves true.
We race to be the first to tell you.
Don Carlos motioned for silence.
Hold them until we can confirm or disprove their story. Give them something to eat and drink, but keep some guards on them, discreetly.
See, Don Carlos, you men, take these three around to the kitchen and see they have something to eat.
Oh, muchas gracias, señor. But our horses need a rub down and toweling. The sweat must not dry on them lest they take a chill.
Our grooms will tend to them. Take them away.
The trio followed the man assigned to lead them to the kitchen. Confirmation was not long in coming. Within 10 minutes came another rider from town, one of Don Carlos's own men, known, trusted. Gunpowder burns, soot stains, and a bullet crease across the muscle of an upper arm added their own mute but eloquent testimony to his account of the sacking of the opera house, though he was somewhat surprised to discover that the tale had already been told. Don Carlos stood on a patio to give them their orders so he could address the mounted men while looking down at them, rather than standing on the ground and looking up.
Go to town. Find who did this and kill them. Take the ringleaders back alive, if possible. I want them to suffer before they beg for death. They have questions to answer. Who's behind all this? Find as many guards as you can, round them up, and bring them here. Send some men to find Capitan Bravo, and hurry him back to Pago to join the hunt. Well, go!
The vaqueros rode out through the open gate and onto the road to Pago. A skeleton crew remained behind to guard the rancho. Gate doors were shut and bolted. Don Carlos stayed behind, of course. The days when he would lead his men into battle were long gone. He was too valuable to risk losing. Too valuable to himself, that is. These days, like all good generals, he led from the rear. A short time later, Don Carlos closeted himself, sealing himself up in his study with brandy and cigars. Henchmen and servants knew better than to bother him now with a lot of nonsense. When they were wanted, he would summon them. Until then, he didn't want to be bothered. Don Carlos stood bolt upright, snatching the gun off the desk. He was frozen in place, listening. He recognized the sound of the front gates of the rancho being opened. A pounding as of many hoofbeats could be heard approaching in the distance. Don Carlos forced himself to go to the window. He lifted the edge of a curtain to look outside. It was a warm night, and the window was open. His study was on the second floor of the hacienda, the window overlooking the courtyard. It looked like all of his guards at the gate were dead on the ground. Before Don Carlos really knew what was happening, a line of riders raced through the open gateway into the courtyard. There were many, 10, no, twice that. They filled the courtyard, reining their horses in hard. For an instant, Don Carlos dared hope that his vaqueros had returned, turning back from their Pago-bound course for some unaccountable reason, coming to the rescue in the nick of time. A second glance was enough to disabuse him of that notion. His vaqueros were hard, tough men, professional guns, killers. But this group was of a whole different order of being, a ragged, wild-looking crew. A glimpse of them through slowly settling dust clouds was enough to tell that. What of his men, defenders of the rancho? Where were they? Some began to show themselves, running out of the bunkhouse toward the edges of the courtyard and the spaces between outbuildings. The bandits had something to shoot at now, and they made quick order of them. Since no other guards seemed to be brave enough to attack, the bandits changed their aim and started shooting at the hacienda in earnest, pouring a volley into the front of the house. A round fired high tore through the window at which Don Carlos stood immobilized. He fell back and he crashed to the floor. Don Carlos crouched on hands and knees, realizing he hadn't been hit. He still had his gun, and he kept hold of that. Crawling on hands and knees to the cover of his massive desk, he rose shakily on rubber legs to a half-crouch, turning toward the door. A flickering shadow at the edge of his vision made him look up. A figure loomed in the doorway. Don Carlos lifted his gun, but it was shot out of his hand before he could pull the trigger. Don Carlos clutched his maimed hand to himself. Broken fingers jutted at odd angles, blood spurts jetted. He staggered back into the desk, its support alone propping him up, keeping him on his feet. The mystery gunman stood framed in the doorway, a hauntingly familiar figure. A line of black pom-pom rebozos dangled from the brim of his sombrero, jiggling back and forth over the stranger's slitted, burning eyes. Serape folds hid the lower half of his face. His smoking gun was held hip-high with seeming nonchalance, giving the illusion that the difficult trick of shooting the gun out of Don Carlos's hand had been tossed off almost negligently. Don Carlos now recognized the shooter as one of the three messengers, the bearers of bad tidings, the one who had remained in the background. He stepped forward into the room, his gun covering Don Carlos.
Who are you?
The stranger's free hand pulled down the serape, uncovering his face.
Hira Chacon!
The massacre at the opera house was so exciting that we had to race here to tell you the good news. Good for me, that is, not for you. The other two? My men, see, but new to the gang. None here know them to recognize them. So obliging of you to open the gates and let us in. Gracias, senor. But then you are always mindful of the little niceties, Don Carlos. I still carry the scars from our last encounter to remind me. We three took care of the guards you had set over us with a strangler's cord and a knife, so as not to disturb you. So you see, Don Carlos, the Chacon is mindful of the social courtesies, too. The other two opened the gates to let the muchachos in. I came in through the kitchen to pay my old friend a visit. It is a meeting I have been waiting for a long time.
What? How did you get away from the Tombstone Jail?
Oh, you made a big mistake when you sent your slavers north across the border. I had a rope around my neck, thanks to you, senor. But the gringos of Tombstone wanted their girls back alive more than they wanted the Chacon dead. I made a grand bargain with them. My life in exchange for leading them here into your stronghold of Pago, so they could destroy you. I put them together with some of the many here who have long had reason to wish you dead. Much as I would like to take credit for your downfall, in all honesty, I cannot. I helped load the gun, see, but others pulled the trigger. And now the deed is done. The bargain is complete. The gringos have their girls back, and I have you.
Don't be hasty, Chacon! Think! Before you pull the trigger, think! The slave market is a big thing now, taking in much gold. Our customers are some of the best people in the land, the best and the biggest, the richest. I need a partner. You have the men and guns. I have political pull and connections, influence all the way to the highest levels of government. I operate compromiso, with permission. Do you understand?
Oh, see, very much so.
Then we'll do business together.
Oh, no. I have something else planned for you, Don Carlos, old friend.
Gila Chacon was the last to ride out of the Rancho de la Vega, all his men having exited through the gates before him. They left well before dawn. Gila would have liked to have lingered, but he couldn't afford the luxury of indulging himself. There was still Captain Bravo and his troops to deal with. When they returned in the morning, exhausted from their wild goose chase searching for Victorio's non-existent war party, which they had been duped into believing massacred their patrol by the river, they would find a surprise waiting for them. The Chacon and his band in possession of the town, at the head of an ambush that would tear into them like the fangs and claws of the jaguar. Gila regretted that the gringos had taken their devil of a machine gun away with them on their flight north. What he could do with such a weapon? He considered racing after them with his men and taking it from them, reluctantly putting aside the thought. Men such as Mad Bodine and Sam Two Wolves were not to be taken lightly, nor Johnny Ringo and Curly Bill and all the others. The least of the raiders was a deadly gun. Why, even the bookkeeper could shoot. It would be madness, too, to charge the machine gun, knowing what it could do, the destruction it sowed. No, best let them go their way and consider it a bargain made and kept. With men such as those, and a weapon such as that, though, the Chacon could make himself a power in Sonora, perhaps the supreme power in the state and beyond. Thoughts of other bandits and strong men who had risen from obscurity to command a nation whirled through his head, opening dizzying prospects. Fate was strange. Who knew but that he and the Brothers of the Wolf might someday meet again? Only time would tell. For now, he and his outlaw band and the rebels of Pago had firepower enough and more to shoot Bravo and his men to pieces. Gila and the muchachos did not leave Rancho Vega empty-handed. Saddlebags and pockets were stuffed to bursting with gold coins. Pack horses and mules were heavily laden with sacks of gold and silver plate, and jewel boxes filled with precious gems, pearl necklaces, and gold trinkets. A wagon and several ox carts were heaped high with plunder, firearms, boxes of ammunition, hundreds of bottles of fine wine and vintage brandies, boxes of cigars, heaps of handsome garments, bolts of expensive fabrics, valuable antiques, and much more. Don Carlos's stable of fine-blooded thoroughbred horses were enlisted as part of the caravan of pillaged loot. The bandits rode out one by one, each afforded an opportunity to bid a final farewell to Don Carlos. Indeed, it was virtually impossible for them not to. For Don Carlos Mondragon de la Vega hung by the neck at the end of a length of yellow hempen rope, suspended from the center of the archway, scanning the tops of the gateposts. An instructive sight, if not a pretty one. Staring eyes bulged in a swollen purple face, blackened tongue extended, the rope of the noose buried deep in the flesh of the neck. Don Carlos hung at such a height that the bottoms of his feet were almost at a level with the tops of the hats of the mounted bandits filing out through the gates. His feet were bare. His expensive custom-made boots had been stolen, too. The muchachos had to duck or tilt their heads sideways to keep from having their sombreros knocked askew by the dangling man's feet. As they passed, they inadvertently seemed to bob their heads in acknowledgement of the generosity of their unwilling host. Or so Gila Chacon saw it, as he sat his horse inside the courtyard, watching his men file out, savoring the sight of his deadly enemy Don Carlos, suffering the fate he had intended for the bandit chief. For such was the justice of the Chacon. The convoy of tombstone raiders and two wagonfuls of freed young females rushed north along the Camino Real, through the narrow gorge of La Garganta and out of the Espinazo. Beyond lay a flat stony plain. At its far end, a wall of mountain peaks was broken by the mouth of a canyon pass stretching north between them. Breaking dawn found the convoy halfway to the pass. South, a plume of dust showed, closing fast. It resolved itself into a band of mounted men.
I make it about 12, maybe 15 men. That how you see it, Joe?
Pima Joe nodded.
We can't outrun them, not with the wagons.
Outrun hell! I say let's have it out with them and kill them.
Can't risk any of the girls getting shot, Bill.
Right, of course. What do we do then?
Send the wagons on ahead while some of us stay behind and tangle with the hombres chasing us.
That's a plan I like. I'll stay, of course.
Me too.
Everybody, rein in!
All the raiders, with the exception of Gitas Maggard, were eager to stay behind. The Mitrailleuse machine gun would do no good here, where there was vast space for the pursuers to peel off and swing wide, clear out of the weapon's field of fire. Then they could converge to hit the convoy's flanks, or even outrace it to cut off the wagons. It was hastily decided that the rear guard would consist of the best mounted pistol fighters, Matt, Sam, Ringo, Curly Bill, Jeff Howell, Hal Purdy, and Ed Dane. The others would escort the wagons to the safety of the North Pass.
I was hoping to be in on the finish.
Once you get to the narrow confines of the pass, you can bring the machine gun into play if they should get by us. I want men I can trust to bring the girls the rest of the way home if we don't make it. Men like you.
Uh-huh. Well, I concede the logic of your argument, but I don't have to like it.
Hell, Remy, you got a solo with the machine gun on stage at the Opera House last night. Let the rest of us have some fun, too.
Well, if that's the way you want them, Matt.
That's how it adds up. Better get moving. Those riders are coming fast, and the girls have to be out of shooting range.
Good luck.
The wagons raced north. Breaking dawn sent long, radiant yellow shafts of sunlight slanting across the pebbly purple-gray plain. The rear guard formed up in a loose line facing south toward the oncoming riders. They started their horses forward.
Damn, but that don't look like Black Angus himself.
It is Jones, along with his gang and some other Jaspers they must have picked up along the way.
Let's put him down for good.
It won't be for bad.
Dorado is mine.
Not if I beat you to him.
Quirk Fang, too.
You're kind of greedy, ain't you, John?
First come, first serve, Bill.
Sounds good. Yeah!
The Tombstone Raiders spurred their horses onward into a gallop, landscape rushing by in a blur. They were outnumbered and slightly better than 2-1 by the foe. Sam shucked his rifle out of the saddle scabbard. The tomahawk was stuck in his belt at his hip. A rider in the lead of the Jones gang was knocked off his horse and lay where he fell, motionless. Bullets began whizzing through the air around the charging Tombstoners. Gunshots popped from the onrushing Jones men, puffballs of smoke forming at their gun barrels. Sam took aim with the Winchester again. The round tagged Sime Simmons, riding on Jones's right, their horses pretty much neck and neck. He sagged, slumping in the saddle like he was melting. Black Angus ducked down still lower, trying for cover behind his charger's massive crupper and head, shooting around it with his six-gun. Carmen was on his left, outracing him, a gun in one hand, blazing away. Like knights of old, locked in a jousting match, the two lines of shooters rushed straight at each other on a headlong collision course. Sam's rifle dropped Porgy Best. Matt Bodine, Ringo, and Curly Bill were grouped together, a triumvirate of six-gun fury. A volley of slugs sieved Sonny Boy Algar, shooting his middle to pieces. Rio Jordan tagged Curly Bill high on the left side, a hot iron creasing Bill's ribs. Bill brought up his pistol and aimed directly at Jordan's face. Matt Bodine came in close with the reins clenched between his teeth and a gun in each hand, both blazing. Jeff Howell's horse collided with that of Slicker Dupree. Jeff catapulted from the saddle, flung head first into the air for some distance. Dupree went down with his horse and was crushed to death. Hal Purdy shot Morgan Donegan in his torso, and Carmen Oliva raised her pistol to aim it between Ed Dane's hat brim and eyebrows. He fell lifeless from his horse. Dorado turned his horse tightly, sunbeams glinting off his golden gun. Purdy pitched forward, upper body bowing outward under the bullet's impact as they shattered his spine. He was dead even before he hit the ground. Ringo reined in beside Curly Bill. Bill's upper left arm and side stained his shirt red.
You all right, Bill?
I ain't hit bad, John. Look out!
Dorado charged, hand coming up to level the golden gun on Ringo and Bill. He figured he'd take them both out with one rapid-fire burst. They were so close. Ringo was turned away from Dorado, and Curly Bill was slowed by his wound. Sam pulled the tomahawk from his belt and let fly, pinwheeling the war hatchet at Dorado's outstretched arm with the golden gun held at the end of it. Dorado went to pull the trigger to burn down Ringo and Bill, but nothing happened. Dorado looked to see what was wrong with the golden gun. There was no gun, no hand either. Sam's tomahawk blade had taken Dorado's hand off at the wrist, severing it. The hand with the gun in its fist flew away into the air. Seeming unfazed, Dorado looked back, searching for what he'd lost. A few paces off, his hand lay in the grass among the weeds, still clutching the golden gun. The gun all a glimmer in the sunlight, looking like it was made of molten metal. Dorado was still game. One-handed, he fumbled for the reins. The horse lurched. He missed his hold and fell off. Amidst the whirling melee, Matt Bodine and Quirt Fane found themselves face to face. Matt quickly brought up his six guns. Quirt toppled off his horse. Black Angus's last charge had taken him off to the side, momentarily out of the action. He looked around, and what he saw was not good. His gang was pretty much done for, along with a handful of vaqueros who detached themselves to him for the chase. Jones was whipped, and he knew it.
Time to quit while the getting is good.
He turned his horse away from the fight toward open space, out of there, away. Carmen Oliva was on foot, clicking the trigger of what she now learned was an empty gun. She and Jones saw each other. She started to wave the gun.
Over here!
Jones changed course, swerving toward her. He came on as she stood facing him. He leaned out of the saddle, long reaching arm curved like a hook. She dropped the gun, freeing both hands for the attempted save. Black Angus scooped her up onto the horseback, planting her behind him. She hung on tightly, hugging Jones. He would have liked to grab another horse. There was no shortage of riderless horses around. Their riders hadn't been shot off them. But they were clustered in the wrong direction, and he was not much minded to stop, not with that big buffalo gun somewhere out there. There was such a thing as crowding your luck too close, even when it was the devil's own. The way he rode, Carmen holding on behind. Two or three other survivors, vaqueros, also peeled off, arrowing away in different directions. Dorado's nightmare world had dissolved into a single object, the golden gun. He crawled to it on hand and knees. It was almost within his reach, inches away. He groped for it with his numb fingers fumbling. A booted foot stepped down on the gun and severed hand, pinning them to the ground. Dorado straightened up, standing on his knees, looking up at Ringo and Curly Bill.
You ain't golden no more, Hoss.
Ringo picked up the gun and hand. The fist was closed tight around the pistol grip. He tried to shake it loose to no avail.
That hand plane just don't want to let go.
Ringo methodically opened the severed hand's fingers one by one, prying them loose. The hand flopped to the ground. The golden gun was clean, unbloodied. It had ebony wood plate handles on the grip. Ringo held the gun measuringly, weighing it in his hand. He liked the feel of it, its balance and heft. It felt right, like it had been made for him. Golden surfaces glimmered, alluring, hypnotic. Ringo could see his face reflected in it, distorted like in a funhouse mirror, but golden, gold. He smiled.
Cursed gun. It has been the death of me. It will bring you no joy, Ringo.
I'm feeling pretty good right now.
May it bring you the same fate it has brought me, you bat.
You killed Bob Farr.
Who?
Bob Farr. You don't even know who he is, do you?
I have killed so many, I don't bother to keep track of them. As will you, Ringo.
You shot Bob Farr in the back of Cactus Patch.
Oh, yes. I hardly recall it. It seemed so unimportant at the time.
If not for that, I wouldn't be here and you'd probably still be alive. At least you'll be getting it straight on instead of from behind.
Shoot and be damned. And damned you will be, Ringo. Damned by the golden gun.
Okay.
Ringo stared down at the golden gun.
You'd be safer holding a rattlesnake. That gun is bad medicine.
Bad luck, you mean?
Yes. The golden gun is bad luck.
What do you expect me to do? Leave it lay here or throw it away?
I would.
I believe you would do that. But I'll take my chances. I'm not superstitious.
Matt looked around at the bodies sprawled on the stony plain.
Well, we took them, but at what a price. Hal Purdy, Ed Dane, Jeff Howell. It's a damn shame. Nothing for it but to load our dead on their horses and take them home for a decent burial.
This was done. Fallen heroes tied face down across their horses. Stray mounts were rounded up to add to the convoy's string. Black Angus's gang was left for the buzzards.
If they'll have them.
Their epitaph.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Black Black Angus and Carmen Oliva were in a tight spot. They had gone east, leaving the gray stony plain behind. They were in a broken land of thin, dry brown soil, gray-black rock outcroppings and dry washes. No water in sight, except what Jones had in his canteen, and most of that had to go to the horse, dribbled out by the palmful for the animal to thirstily lick from his hand. Not a trickling spring or waterhole was in view. There was no going back to Pago, an unhealthy climate for slave hunters, now that the power of Don Carlos was broken. That door was closed. The horse plodded on. It had had a hard run north out of Pago through the Espinazo, and the double load of Jones and Carmen had carried on its back wasn't helping.
I know a little Pueblo village about 10 to 15 miles from here. That's if Victorio ain't wiped it out. They ain't got much, but we can get another horse or mule and some food and water. Especially water.
Then what?
North, back across the border.
Huh. What's there, a rope?
What's here? We're done in this part of Sonora. Play it out.
They plodded on, the sun rising, a miserable ride in the mounting heat. Misery embittered by the knowledge of defeat. The horse couldn't be pressed too hard. It was already carrying the weight of two. If something should happen to it to cause it to go lame, Black Angus and Carmen would be forced to go afoot in this high desert, paring slim chances down to next to nothing. A line of low rocky ridges rose in the east. A blur of motion flickered in the corner of Jones's eye, motion where none should be. A line of mounted men came into view, cresting the ridge, eight or more, neat, compactly made. Dusty, copper-skinned men with long black hair astride tough, scrappy little horses.
What? What is it?
Apaches!
The Apaches must have been some of Victorio's bucks, Jones reckoned. A raiding party. He turned his horse's head, pointing it north. The line of Apaches went north along the ridge, keeping pace with Jones and Carmen on the horse. Jones knew they were being played with because ordinarily Apaches never skyline. They're too trail-wise for that. They're only seen when they want to be seen. Jones fought to keep calm, to quell the rising panic in him. The Apaches angled down off the ridge, coming up behind Jones and Carmen. It wasn't much of a chase, not against that overloaded, exhausted horse. The horse stumbled over a gopher hole, falling and throwing its riders. Jones and Carmen struggled to their feet. The Apaches closed in.
What do we do now, Angus? What do we do now?
Jones knew the answer to that one. He'd seen what Apaches do to captives unlucky enough to be taken alive. He drew his gun. Only one bullet was left. He'd forgotten to reload after the fight, and there was no time left now.
Sorry, Carmen.
Black Angus put the gun to his head.
Oh, God. Oh, Jones, you dirty coward!
The Apaches formed a ring around her, hemming her in. On Monday, September 18th, 1880, the convoy of freed girls and their rescuers rode into Tombstone, Arizona. It rode through town, people rushing out of doors to see, throngs of them lining the street, cheering and shouting. Men waved hats in the air, women fluttering handkerchiefs, kids running around yelling and screeching. It was as if a carnival had come to town, touching off a festive mood of celebration. Wagons and riders turned into Allen Street, rolling to a halt in front of the Hotel Earl. The church pastor was there, and members of the Ladies Auxiliary Do-Good Society crowding the wagons, ready hands reaching up to help the girls down and into the hotel. The street was so thick with cheering crowds that there was barely room to move. Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves exchanged glances and rueful smiles, knowing that the happiness of the moment had been bought at the price of the lives of some damn good men, and a long trail of corpses of some damned bad ones. 100 ways to kill, yes, and 1,000 ways to die.
What was it that Fritz the Undertaker said? In the midst of death, we are in life.
I'll drink to that. Hell, I'll drink to anything. I'm thirsty.
Lead on, brother.
Thank you.
Blood Bond is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2012, William W. Johnstone, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with the Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Drew Kopas, Tim Carlin, Eric Messner, David Coyne, Jonathan Watkins, Richard Rowan, Joe Brack, James Keegan, Thomas Keegan, Evan Casey, Alexander Strain, Casey Platt, Christopher Graybill, Tim Pabone, Michael Glenn, Scott McCormick, Danny Gavigan, Joel David Santner, Bradley Smith, Ken Jackson, Gary Tells, Christopher Sheeran, Patrick Bussink, Nora Ashrati, David Harris, Nanette Savard, Kimberly Gilbert, Michael John Casey, Colleen Delaney, Lily Beacon, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Dwayne Beeman, Brian Rogers, and Damian Chop Richardson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Nathaniel Perry. With original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Blood Bond, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Savage Texas and Elmer Kelton's The Man Who Rode Midnight, available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Now here's a surprise.
Are you alone?
At the moment. Raymond, aren't you supposed to be dead?
Not that I know of.
How did he die?
They said you both died on Olympus Creek. Are we correct in assuming that you are no longer working with the Unified Authority?
Yes, sir. That would be a correct assumption.
Are you fugitives?
Enemies might be a better description.
Arthur tracked the Avatari signal to Boda's galaxy. The Navy should have sent a fleet to destroy their home world by now.
Admiral, we have lost 3/4 of our fleet. We no longer have the firepower we need to carry out our mission. We must return to Earth. We must report that we have located the aliens and request a larger fleet and more troops. As the Master Chief has suggested, we should have our SEALs open the way and send in Marines.
What do you suggest, Master Chief?
Maybe we should return to Earth.
We should return?
We should return and report what we have found. If we attack now and we fail, everything we have learned will be lost. We need to make our report, then launch our attack. We're not here to defeat this enemy. We need to destroy them.
Kill him, Harris! Well, that's an order!
Any last words?
Look, we got all kinds of stuff. I promise, I'll give you half of everything. No, all of it. All of it, I'm good for it.
Sounds like you've got the golden goose. Maybe I should let you go.
Oh, you won't be sorry. You won't. You're gonna be rich!
We meet right here, day after tomorrow. If you're not here with enough swag to fill a transport, you're a dead man. Get out of here.
Why did you let him go?
Didn't you hear? He's going to make me rich.
You're never going to see him again.
Damn straight I'm not going to see him again. Why the spec do you think we evacuated this planet? In 3 hours, the city's going to be dust, and that bastard is going to be dust along with it.
I told you to kill him. You disobeyed a direct order.
Yeah, we need to talk about that. Admiral, I'm relieving you of command.
You're what?
These are dire times, Admiral, and you're not fit for command.
Who the hell do you think you're speaking to?
Admiral Stephen R. Jolly, enlisted man's Navy, retired.
You can't do this!
Captain Holman, how much do you know about ancient Rome?
I know about the Praetorian Guard.
Really? Are you a fan of the classical age?
Not until recently. Am I looking down the barrel of a promotion?
A big one.
What about Admiral Jolly?
Shot by a looter. That was on Gobi. You saw the report.
And now you're placing me in charge?
I have every confidence in you.
Did you have every confidence in Admiral Jolly?
I was obligated to give him a shot because of his seniority.
You killed him.
Not me. It was the looter.
Are you gonna kill me if I screw up?
I need a commander. Are you in or out?
I'm in.
Glad to hear it. You couldn't have taken this post at a better time. We're about to launch a sensitive operation.
Captain! There's something out there!
Where?
I'm changing course! I'm changing course!
Shields up!
They're robotic! I'm detecting a signal!
Clear path! We need to break through!
Know this, gentlemen. Our only chance of survival is to establish a colony on a planet that the aliens have already attacked. We are going to colonize Terrano. As many of you know, the Unified Authority patrols that area. Our barges will be vulnerable. The Navy has asked a lot of you over the last month, and you have delivered. Now I'm going to ask even more of you than ever. Some of you will be asked to make the ultimate sacrifice. In order for this plan to work, we will need to draw the UA fleet away from Providence Kree and Terrano. That means opening a front that will draw the Unified Authority's forces away. We are going to invade Earth.
Stephen L. Kent. Rogue Clone. Book 7. The Clone Redemption.
Available now in graphic audio.
Well, who the hell are you?
I'm the law. And if you pull that pistol, I'm gonna shove it up your ass and pull the trigger.
Graphic Audio presents Shootout at Broken Bow.
Put that thing back in your boot. It's time for you to call it a night. Get your money off the table and clear out of here. Maybe you'll have better luck tomorrow. Kind of an unfriendly way to greet customers.
Well, I'm sorry, mister, but the past few days around here has got a lot of folks kind of edgy when a stranger walks in.
You stay away from my wife!
I don't think so.
Oh, no! Oh!
Shut up!
He was here. Him and three of his boys.
How long ago?
He left here 2 nights ago.
Did he say where he was headed?
Nope, and I didn't ask him.
Did you see which way he headed when he left here?
Yeah, I watched him leave. He started out to the north following Boggy Creek.
So you found us. What are you aiming to do about it, seeing as how it's your gun against our four?
Well, that's just it, damn it. If you'd gone the hell back to Texas after you robbed that train at Durant Station, it wouldn't have caused me no problem. But now I ain't by myself. I expect in about 10 or 15 minutes it's gonna be somebody on that hill above us that ain't looking for no payoff.
My God, somebody's gonna pay for this. If I have to ride into Fort Smith and shoot that judge right down in his damn courtroom. It pleasures me to know that you're looking out for us.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.